Hello, and welcome to the 2010s. I'm your host, Nathan Stevens, and today we have Miju. We're talking about her debut as a solo artist, Rotten Bun for an Eggless Century, a progressive, thrilling, calming, distorted, grotesque, and sometimes enchanting album that mixes indie rock, electronica, and a whole host of other influences to become something that I've played on repeat time and time again. We talked with her about the album today on the 2010s.
In the videos for both Peach Skin and the, I guess, visualizer for Sore Bear, there's this kind of combination of the cute and the grotesque a little bit. How did that dichotomy kind of pop up in this album, or did that even start before with your EP, A Wonderful Thing That Vomits?
Yeah, it definitely, it's actually something that I've always naturally gravitated towards to in all my music, even in previous projects. I've always just been sort of naturally gravitating towards things that are complete opposite and sort of like smushing them together. And it's, yeah, I like sort of something that's a bit kind of nice and beautiful, but also a bit unnerving and a bit unsettling. Both of those pieces of work are from artists who I felt their work kind of embodied that as well. So it's kind of something that I was reaching for, but also looking for in other people's work. Particularly, both Clump Collective, who made Ghost with a Peach Skin, they have a very fun way of making music videos that's got elements of like, I guess cuteness, but also a bit of a dark humor to it. And I kind of felt like that was just such a fun collaboration because we were all on the same page in terms of like what we wanted to achieve. And it's the same with Sore Bear. I worked with Danny Grant, who I've actually been in a band with, in a band called Dharma Scout, and we both have like a fondness of film. Like we bond a lot over film, and we have very similar tastes and approaches to visuals. So it was very like fun working with all of them.
Yeah, I mean, the cognitive dissonance in terms of having two different, very different elements also goes into some of the lyrics on this. My favorite lyric from the opening is "Sorcerers and witches who doubt themselves," and it's kind of mundane worries with this really fantastical world. So you are crashing together these like very different images and elements together.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you sort of that caught your eye, that lyric, because that was actually one of the first lyrics that that was written as part of this album, and I kind of knew the sort of concept I was going for, and that lyric just sort of came to me, and I just felt like this kind of embodies like what I want the album to be about, something that is both fantastical but also has a sense of like normality or is a bit arbitrary. And yeah, like I'm just picturing a wizard like having like a nervous breakdown and always burning out from like too much spell casting, or I don't know. And just sort of merging fantasy and normality in ways that are, I guess, a bit humorous. I think there are like more moments on the album that's funnier than people realize, but yeah, I think that's just, yeah, it's what I like, stuff that kind of doesn't quite merge well together, or things that you don't expect to be mixed together.
I think that's interesting because it lends a sense of nuance to it, because I think when we're consuming a book or we're watching a film, sometimes when we see things, it's like, that thing is cute and that's all it is. Or that thing's a wizard and a wizard is a wizard. A wizard doesn't get burnout because we don't think about, you know, them as like fully fleshed out beings. But it seems like you really are in this album lyrically trying to go through and be like, here's this creature, here's this character. They are a person on top of everything else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Totally.
In the press and the lyrics, you kind of mention a protagonist going through this journey. How distant is that protagonist from yourself, and how much are you kind of writing yourself as a character within this world, I suppose?
I think when I had the idea of creating a character in a world, I kind of like saw this protagonist as many things. Like, I kind of saw it as like maybe an alien or an outcast, or like a young woman who's trying to navigate between different cultures. And sometimes that is, it's just me. It kind of has elements of different things. But I guess the character kind of goes on a journey, sort of like overcoming, I guess, like demons and horrors. And like, I kind of felt like, I like that was kind of like me overcoming my own demons and like dealing with like racism and microaggressions growing up and having to navigate between being British but also being raised in a household, a Chinese household. And I kind of like, it was a way of me kind of processing all of that, if that makes sense.
Was it helpful then to flip into second and third person to view these things and give yourself a different perspective?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it definitely kind of made me, it was a way of me kind of also celebrating my own Hong Kong heritage and having a different perspective of it. And around this time when I was writing this album, it was around the time when there was a lot of hate crime towards East and Southeast Asian people who probably felt like they didn't know how to sort of, I guess like everyone kind of wanted to like sort of hide away. And but as a result of that, communities of people came together in order to like share their stories and also kind of help each other. And that in itself, I think, came through in the music as well. Kind of seeing the protagonists overcome certain power, certain things, like a sort of superpower with the solidarity of like, yeah, the community around them.
Yeah, because
Go ahead. Oh, no, you go.
I was just going to say that some of the anchors to kind of the real world in this fantasy world you're creating are audio clips. Like you have, if I'm correct, your dad talking about how to create a dish, like it's kind of a tutorial on how to make a certain dish, or the line, "I'm so proud of you" on Mother's Tongue. Those are like these moments of the real world going into the fantasy world, but it's your world going into the fantasy world. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm surprised you knew what that meant. the line that my mom says.
Was it important to ground a little bit of the fantasy world when you're talking about dealing with microaggressions, dealing with the hate crimes of the time, and be like, okay, we're in a fantasy world, but we're still connected to these everyday problems that I'm dealing with, my family dealing with, my community is dealing with.
Yeah, definitely. I guess, yeah, those clips that you mentioned of my parents, like, it was sort of like a reminder of, like, what my parents did for me when I grew up, even though, like, I grew up sort of resenting my Chinese identity and kind of hiding it. And it was just a way of kind of, like, just sort of embracing who I was and who I am, and kind of like as a sort of message to my younger self, like, this is like, this is part of who you are. And like with my dad's sort of description of the Hong Kong dish, like that was just sort of the reason why I chose that dish as well, was just because like it's what my dad made, and it's a sort of Hong Kong way of like making a fried egg. It's very like, just, it's simple, but like the translation Ho Ba Dan is it basically translates to, I think it's like purse egg, so it's like a little like purse. And I sort of liked that kind of imagery as well, like I kind of, like to tie in with the sort of video game aspect. I kind of saw it as like a little purse, like a little inventory where you put all your like fantastical items. And but it just had lots of like ties in with like the story, as well as being a dish that my dad made. And food growing up was a huge part of bonding with my family, and it's probably the few times that I get to like really sit down and socialize with them. And it's always like our love of food is what brings us together.
Well, it also works with the title. Having an eggless century would be, at least in my mind, after you said that, is a lack of community, a lack of bonding. If there's a century without being able to, you know, cook with other people.
Absolutely.
I think it was in some of the press or something to that effect. You've mentioned Strange Stories from a Chinese Studio, which is supernatural stories that also critique society, from my very brief Wikipedia lookup of that. Do you feel, I mean, you've kind of confirmed this so far, but how much is Rotten Bun similar with a surreal fantasy world that is commenting or critiquing our world as well? You have an internal story within this album, but it's running parallel to actual, you know, issues that you're dealing with or you're seeing in the world.
Yeah. So yeah, like I was mentioning before, when I started writing with this project, it was like at a time where like I felt like I had to sort of, I think I was just going through a bit of a time when, I just had to process a lot of what was going on. And I basically hid at home with my cat and made art. And but then, like I was saying, these community groups that started like has also made me feel very empowered. But it wasn't, I wasn't intentionally writing an album that was like very reflective of this. This was just like my way of kind of, processing all of this in this sort of way. But like, I even though, I'm talking about experiences from the real world, but like, if it is commenting on like stuff that's happening in the real world, it's done very vaguely, or it's done so vaguely. And even though I talk about like good and evil as concepts, I usually conclude that everything is a bit too complex. And it's, I guess it's fairly inconclusive, to be honest.
Sore Bear was the first song that I heard, and it's interesting to come in on an ending track as your introduction to an album. But I thought there was kind of an ambivalence, or a not antipathy, but like definitely this feeling of like we've come to an end, there's closure, but there's also damage at the same time. So it was a gray area. It's not a triumph necessarily. So I can see what you're saying from that. Like, there are demons and witches and sorcerers, but it's like, it was like we were saying earlier, there's nuance. Everybody's a 3D character in this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You were talking about video games earlier. Are there particular games? Are you thinking of like inventory systems from Breath of the Wild, or like what?
I mean, I love Breath of the Wild. that is one of my favorite games. I am so excited for the next one.
And whenever it comes out.
Itching for it. But I'm a big, I wouldn't, I wouldn't say like I'm a huge gamer, but like I definitely grew up loving video games and being very much influenced by them. And like I think the music in video games has definitely influenced my sound. And it's yeah, I just love the world that it transports you to, particularly with like Breath of the Wild. I would just often end a day at work and just go sort of deflate with like just riding around on a horse in Hyrule and just making some dubious food.
Link's poor face when he has to eat that stuff.
I
It's so
know.
funny.
I know, so good. But yeah, it's definitely a huge influence, and I think that's like what the concept of this album sort of stemmed from, was my goal to sort of like create a world and sort of center around like a particular character who we're sort of journeying with as they live and conquer.
Speaking of kind of different artwork, your poetry work was recently published with Poor Brain. How closely
Yeah.
linked are your poetry works and your lyrics, or are they a little bit separate?
So my song "Poor Brain," the lyrics were printed as part of this publication called Lyrics as Poetry. I've never written any poetry myself, but it's been really nice to sort of see it printed and see it like as like presented like a poem. But it was part of that this lovely publication along with a few other amazing artists and songs and lovely illustrations. But I feel like my lyrics, I feel like they don't I feel like they're better existing with music. I don't ever see my words as like a standalone thing.
Kind of on that note, is it when you are writing music, especially with an album that has a full concept, is it lyrical idea, emotional idea first, or is it, oh, I have a piano riff, I have a guitar riff, I have a vocal melody first?
So I think my approach is it normally starts off with a vocal melody or a feeling, and I'll just sort of use that and build on it. And I would then grab a guitar and just sort of work out some chords with it. And Lucci, who I work with a lot on this out who I've worked with a lot on this album, I would then go to him and he would just sort of help me flesh it out and produce it together and sort of bring it to life really. Lucci was also in my other band Dharma Scout, and he's just a great producer and we work very well together, and I think he always knows like what sort of things I'm reaching for. So yeah, vocals and melody usually initially, but it does vary sometimes. But yeah, I think a lot of the songs that I've loved like putting together have all come together in one go, like sitting lyric like working on lyrics and being at the piano or the guitar, just like sitting and just letting it all flow out. I try not to be too critical of myself in that moment. I try and sort of picture myself as like a conduit of to ideas and just letting them kind of all come out and judge them later. And yeah,
Yeah.
think that's my sort of process.
It's interesting that vocals come first because there are some instrumental passages here, and there's also the fact that you cover up your voice and distortion on Dancing for Drinks. And I wanted to ask you about that song of like lyrically or within the concept of the album, what is that voice? Why are the lyrics being so covered up so your voice is almost more of an instrument than a narrative instrument, so to speak?
With Dancing for Drinks, I kind of w I w wanted a song on the album that was kind of like a sort of a malfunctioning mess. And it was, I saw it as a sort of the protagonist, like kind of reaching their limit and is trying to unlearn old routines and habits and is having to like reset in some sort of way. And this sort of malfunctioning is kind of like a little sort of little nod to like video games again, and it kind of serves as a little glitch. And with the lyrics, it's mostly about the sort of mundaneness of like 9 to 5 and like having to the constant sort of loop that you go through in order to like please other people, and you're overdoing it, and like you're starting to like break apart, and that's why the lyrics are like on loop and they get a little bit more sort of fucked up. Oh, sorry.
Believe me, it's fine.
Sorry. A bit more sort of jangled up. I love distorting my voice. I love like making it sound a bit alien like. And it's definitely something that I wanted to try on this album. But yeah, it's mostly that anyway, but I did see a sort of like a cool way of like bringing in a bit of like other elements of the story along with that.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know
if
that
makes sense. Yeah. I was also going to ask kind of on that note, because of the instrumental passages, you have a song Papa, and that's for your grandparents, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was curious to have an instrumental song when you have the voices of your parents on the album, and then you have an instrumental passage for your grandparents. I was just wondering about the composition of that and kind of the background of creating that.
So, sadly, I lost my grandfather last year, and my grandfather the year before that, and it was just sort of like a way of just like celebrating them, and like with this journey of discovering more and more about my Hong Kong heritage, and like with that, I've been sort of chatting to my family more about like their journey moving over from Hong Kong to Ireland. And I guess I was wanting to bring an element of them into the album as like sort of celebrating again like my heritage. And the use of erhu is a Chinese instrument. It's like a two string instrument, two, like meaning two, and then who I think is string. And it's a lovely instrument. It's so emotional, and it's a lovely instrument that my granddad used to play. And he wasn't a man of many words, but growing up, I just was so mesmerized by his playing, because it's probably the most emotional I had seen him was playing the erhu. And with Pawpaw is also grandmother in Cantonese, so it was a name that kind of stuck, even though it's like it's to do with all my grandparents. I really wanted a traditional Chinese instrument on this particular track. I wanted it sort of dotted like throughout the whole album, like whether it's guzheng or erhu. But erhu I really wanted it on this one because of my grandfather. And we basically wrote the part just like into logic, like MIDI, and spoke to a friend who plays erhu to sort of either replicate that but also improvise. So it was like a big mix of like improvisation, and we recorded it and sort of distorted it or like manipulated it in certain ways. And sometimes we even like recorded it straight onto like a four track, onto tape, where we would like maybe slow it down or pitch it down and then put it back in, just to sort of like blend more into the sort of Moichi mold, if you will. And yeah, that's kind of like where that came about. And I felt that the erhu is such an emotional instrument that it didn't necessarily need like more vocals, and I just wanted it to be like a bigger feature in the song.
With this album being completed and being released soon, how do you feel like it's affected your feelings towards your own identity and heritage? Has that been kind of a cathartic process?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, it's kind of amazing how it's all happened so quickly. And it just, it's for me, the album's very sort of like, oh, what's the word? Not revealing, but it's just very sort of, it's very personal to me. And that to hear and see people connect with it has been amazing. And I think once the album's out, it's not like I'll say goodbye to it, but like it'll be like a sort of, yeah, it will be sort of cathartic anyway, but it'll then sort of open up another sort of, and like another area for when I dive into the next album.
Yeah. And you have your first solo headlining show soon. How are you envisioning transposing this to a live situation? And does having your first solo headlining show change anything for you in terms of how you feel about that show?
Yeah, I think it is a huge deal for me. I just found out this morning that it's sold out.
Congrats.
Thank you. So that's been an absolute shock. But I'm super excited to start translating the whole album into a live setting. And we'll sort of treat it differently in that I'll have another musician joining. I have a violinist called Coco Inman who will be playing a violin, obviously. and she'll be sort of recreating some of the string parts in the album. So I'm looking forward to that. And also just like having a longer time to play and to sort of let the audience sort of immerse more into the world of Moichi, and also just kind of like forcing them into like the Moichi swamp and really get, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, it is exciting for sure.
I could be overthinking this. I feel like I picked up on kind of a meta narrative where you talk about bruises on peach skin, slowly those bruises making the protagonist more resilient over time. And you also talked about sampling music and bruising it and kind of fucking it up in a way. But of course, that process makes the original sample more in line with the world of this album. So I'm just wondering if those two kind of run parallel with each other.
The sort of the recording and the bruising. You mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so with Ghost with the Peach Skin, the Gujong was, I'm not sure if you're aware of Gujong. It's kind of like it's a Chinese zither that's a 21 string instrument. It sort of sounds a bit like a harp. But yeah, we wanted to sort of like manipulate it by, yeah, I guess, like you said, we wanted to bruise it in a way to kind of make it feel like, to sort of make it kind of be a part of this album and like the sound that I love, sort of putting things in and kind of like stretching it out and putting it down a tone. And it's the same, well, it's a similar thing to what we did with the piano as well. So it kind of like merges this sort of organicness, but also kind of artificialness, if that makes sense.